students to Embracing the Real, where we keep things real and discuss topics that teens are currently facing in their lives, such as experiencing anxiety, peer pressure, and dating and relationship issues. We break down challenges and experiences that teens face today. Hear from a panel of mental health professionals and experts and personal stories of resilience from other teens. Thank you for tuning in.
Today on Embracing the Real, we'll be discussing social effects of the pandemic on teens. Today, I have my co-host, Dr. Lowley with Willowbrook Psychiatric Center, a psychiatrist, and Abby from Villa Rica High Schools. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you so much to be here.
Hi, Shavis. Pleasure to be here with you again.
Thank you. So, Abby, tell us a little bit about yourself.
So, I'm a junior at Villa Rica High School, and I'm very passionate about cheering for the high school. And I really was drawn to this topic because of the way it affected not only my school life, but also how it affected cheerleading as well.
Yeah, I know you have your own personal story directly related to this.
Yes, so last year when we came back to school, it was actually this week, was homecoming week, and I didn't really think anything about it. Like, you know, we kind of forgot about COVID, but it was still a little different having to wear a mask and stuff. But Friday, which was our homecoming, I was actually on court, and we went through walking on the field and stuff, and it was a lot different because, like, the dance was canceled and everything because of COVID. But I went home the next day, and I really didn't feel good, and I got a message saying that my uncle from church had COVID, and it was like a big thing throughout our church. And I was really worried about it, and I told Mom, like, to be safe, I would rather go get a test, you know, because my nose was stuffy and I had a headache. Well, turns out I had it. And that immediately, like, I just was so scared because I've been in so much contact with so many people, you know, and the week and a half out that I was quarantined, you know, I missed a football game and I missed all my social interactions with all my friends. Emotionally, like, took a toll on me, I feel like. And coming back to cheerleading, you know, I was so excited to be there. And I didn't realize how big COVID actually affected people because, you know, I went back to cheerleading and it just wasn't the same. Mm. You know, with my health and just overall the mindset, I feel like, going back.
Can you tell us a little bit about what you mean? Like, were you treated differently?
Yeah, was it psychological? Was it physical? How were you different after you?
It was very psychological and physical because I came back and, you know, I had asthma before that and I really didn't think anything about it, you know, because I thought we had outgrown it, you know. And I came back and, like, my breathing was just really bad. Like, going through routine, I couldn't make it through the routine. And that really took a toll on my mind, you know, my confidence, my self-esteem, you know. And, you know, we went to a lot of doctor's appointments, a lot of tests being done. And with COVID, there's so much unknown that nobody really knows and can give an answer. So that really, I battled a lot in my mind with COVID and at practice, you know, like, it kind of makes your self-esteem go down, but I'm learning to kind of cope with it more.
Yeah. Talking about coping, how did you manage that? I mean, obviously it was causing a lot of stress.
I say I had a really good support system, you know, and I was able to talk, like, I was more comfortable enough to talk about my feelings to my coaches and my teammates. Like, my teammates were the best support system I had in that because they would always encourage me when they saw, you know, I'd start to heavy breathing, you know, and then they would just, like, the simple words of just, like, you got it or you can do this really helped me in, like, my psychological aspect of it. And also I had great coaches that could tell whenever I was starting to get tired or if I needed to sit out, or they just listened to me.
Yeah, so you had a good support system. That's good.
Yes.
So speaking of which, how, Dr. Lowley, I want to hear a little bit from you and you, Abby. What are some tips or advice that we could give other teens to constructively feel, you know, express their feelings related to COVID, like the anxiety surrounding it, and et cetera?
Yeah, I mean, I think one, this is like meta-narrative for mental health in general, but especially for the pandemic. Mm-hmm. I think it's really important to do exactly what Abby's courageously doing by joining us on this pod today, is actually normalizing the discussion. I think when we feel comfortable at school or in homeroom or at home around the dinner table with family, just to get used to actually not having devices in our hands, not looking down, not all being distracted or in each other's company, and actually thinking, you know, how was your day? How are you? Are you really doing okay? And I think once, you know, you give people space, and this is as true for grandparents, great-grandparents, as well as chatting with teens, if you give people space to express themselves, give people space and validate their emotions. And I think particularly with teens, one thing I find in clinic is people don't want explanation, they want understanding. Mm. I think it's not good to say, this is what you're doing wrong, this is the solution. Sometimes just actually saying, yeah, that sucks. This is a really bad time. You've missed all these dances, you've missed proms, you've missed graduation. Some people left high school without any closure at all, and all the, you know, the big milestones that you, you know, see people above you look forward to, and lots of people didn't get that. And the same as all my freshmen I work with didn't have the same experience that we idolize when transitioning to college. So I would say the big thing for me is just, you know, normalizing the conversation and making that, you know, a standard part of dialogue to break down stigma. And if we're talking about something all the time, it's just really not a big deal, and we're not going to miss things.
Yeah, so I hear you normalizing and validating feelings. Yes. And kind of what you said, I like that, being able to share that with your support system is really important.
Yes.
So, yeah. So what would you say is the right way for adults or parents to respond to their teens who are sharing their feelings? You know, and it may be negative, like feelings of anxiety. You know, we talked about the uncertainty related to COVID-19. So a lot of people are having difficulty with that because, you know, there is a lot of unknown, and about a potentially whole new way of doing life, or like missing events that we discussed.
I think honestly, just listening is a big thing in that, because sometimes like your emotions just get so bottled up and just like letting it all out, you know, and sometimes you just need a person to like vent to or say your feelings. And I think just maybe listening is a great way to respond.
Yeah, I would say just for parents in particular, it's really being attentive. And unfortunately, you know, your kids are not going to present in crisis at a time that is convenient for you. It's not like, okay, yep, yeah, that's nice, dear. Let's do this at Friday at 7 p.m. once I've finished work and I've done my 3 meetings and I can put down my laptop and actually, you know, do this. I think it's important to be responsive in the moment and being adaptable. I think parents are really generationally not necessarily adaptable to the same means of communication. I know lots of young people who like to express themselves via text or in a way that, you know, might be nonverbal to start a conversation. And I think parents probably need to get, you know, adaptive there. I think Abby hit on a really important thing, and there are countless studies. And on average, when teens are asked about their parents, the number is around 50%. People think parents talk 50% too much compared to the amount of listening they do. Mm. And I think that probably comes back into the, I think parents, for good reasons to want to help their kids, seek to explain, to problem solve, and really maybe just understanding and some space to vent, as Abby said, is exactly you know, what many teenagers need. And also respecting privacy. Then, you know, I mean, I work with lots of young people who have a variety of mental health challenges of varying degrees and severities, but the, are you okay? Are you okay? Are you okay? Mm-hmm. Are you okay? Yeah, Mum, the last 7 minutes were fine. We're watching TV. It's, you know, sometimes knowing when not to talk and when to give space, I think, is really important. And, you know, and it is a ridiculous cliche, but I think when you say to someone, I love you and I'm here for you, you know, people take that into their heart and they remember it next time they're having a bad time. And I'm always a bit cheesy and sentimental, and that's sadly how I run my clinic. But I think just letting people know that I am here for you when you need me, it really is so, so powerful and such a force for good.
Yeah, so letting them come to you. And the biggest takeaway, just listen. Have create a space where you can really listen to what's going on. Oh, those are good points. What are some good ways to manage distress related to COVID-19 or the pandemic for adults and our teens, just in general?
I think, like, looking at everything, you get kind of overwhelmed with the different ways that the pandemic, you know, at school and stuff and your chores. And I feel like what helps me is making a checklist. So just completing some homework or completing, like, doing the dishes or something like that and checking it off, it gives me a sense of satisfaction through each one and gives me motivation to keep going. So when you look at the big picture, you've accomplished a lot.
I mean, I think with pandemic stress, it's really important to, I would say, two things. One, not comparing ourselves to other people and having self-compassion. I mean, we know that when schools have closed for a couple of weeks, we've all got that one friend who comes back having learned to play the ukulele or written half a novel. And I think comparing yourself to the one who, you know, learns to play the ukulele and has written half a novel isn't great. I mean, for me, sometimes if I'm getting to work on time and having a shower, that is a good day. So I think, you know, one step at a time, one day at a time, and whatever that means to ourselves. And I think I guess a flip side to that is making ourselves emotionally available for our friends and the people we care about. And then the second thing I'd say with COVID is I think it showed all of us just how little control we have. We, you know, I think it made me feel very small in the world and a part of something much bigger. And I think then there's two columns. There's stuff I can control and there's stuff I can't control. And I think in the stuff that you can control, it's, you know, what are you eating? Are you eating foods that make you feel good? Are you practicing decent sleep hygiene? If you're, you know, up on Snapchat all night and got a big widescreen TV blasting movies, you're not going to be getting decent sleep. Making sure you get, you know, your 8 to 10 hours or whatever you need. I think keeping in check with your relationship with the news and social media. I think, as Abby said, the news is very overwhelming. And if you were comparing at the height of the pandemic, Fox and CNN, you'd be thinking we were in two different countries in two different pandemics. And I think part of that, I think schools are starting to get wise on this, is looking at what sources we're actually looking at for our news. I think we can find things on the internet that say, you know, all manner of things, but, you know, generally local government and the CDC are pretty good resources for most people. And I think news and, you know, participation in the wider narrative should also be measured. I think some people thrive on having information. Other people get really overwhelmed with information and it makes their heads want to explode. Yeah. And I think it's just thinking, okay, what is my relationship with media, social media, and the world around me right now, and what do I need? And I think, you know, and then as a part of that, just having huge amounts of compassion for yourself and think, I'm doing my best every day. And it might not be perfect, it might not be where we were before the pandemic in many regards, but, you know, knowing that I'm doing my best and moving forward one day at a time was certainly, you know, even as a physician, the approach that I took a lot of the time at the height of the COVID scare.
Yeah, I think self-compassion is definitely huge. I think we need to remind ourselves that we are living through a pandemic. There's already normal life stressors of being a teenager, being in high school, middle school, and now we're going through our third year of living in a pandemic and having to move through that. And how do we do that? You know, speaking of managing stress, what advice would you give to help our, you know, students stay on task? You know, when they have, you know, we talked a little bit, the stress of a lot of homework assignments, especially this year, it seems like we're resuming normal school activities where a lot of homework's being given out, managing, you know, being a cheerleader and gymnastics. Like, what are some tools that you would get, or, you know, or advice you would give?
So homework and any kind of, you know, structured school tasks, firstly, just to validate every, you know, person of school age listening, it has been way more challenging for absolutely everybody to motivate themselves to do these tasks that were considered commonplace before COVID. Everybody is finding it difficult to motivate themselves and stay on top of their schoolwork. And of course, there's that lovely cycle of one, getting anxious about two assignments that are due and then avoiding, and then it becomes five, and then it becomes a self-perpetuating cycle of assignments, avoidance, and assignments. And I think, you know, the first things first, exactly as Abby said when we were talking about how to manage the stress of COVID, I think it is one day at a time, one class at a time, one assignment at a time. I think it's good to break everything down into constituent bits and knowing, okay, this is a big list of things that I have to do. And at least when I'm doing my work, I like to think, okay, there are some of these tasks that are difficult and time consuming. Some of them are short and easy, and others fall in the middle. And I think we've all got that, one teacher, or in my case, manager, that when an email pops into your inbox, you think, oh Christ, here we go. So I would do the things that cause the most distress first, because getting rid of things is always good when it's something that causes perpetual worry.
Yeah, managing our time.
And then pick off a few easy things and just sort of gradually work down the to-do list. I think it's important to know when to take breaks. I think it's important to start things. That, for me, is the one that I fall into. I won't tell you how many overdue clinic notes I have at the close of the financial quarter in 12 hours' time, but, I think starting a task is the hardest part. I think once you sit down and you put more pen to paper in my generation, but for you guys, finger to tablet or thumb to laptop or whatever it is now, I think once you get that first paragraph done or start solving that, first horrible problem in Algebra 2, I think, then everything, believe it or not, does flow quite well. And I think asking for help when necessary is an important one. I think knowing when we're not doing well is something that as humans we've actually got a little bit better at during the pandemic. And I think academically this is a principle that everyone can take on. If you don't know, typically there's always someone who can help and give advice. And then all of that boring doctor lifestyle stuff that I've already mentioned. I mean, your brain is basically a clump of jelly that runs on glucose. And if you're not taking time to sit back and eat, run out of glucose, your body starts breaking down your muscles to make ketones. That's why those keto folks have all those steaks and big bits of fish and all that. That's the keto thing. But basically, you've got to have enough fuel in the tank to be academically efficient. Hydration is, of course, important. And, everyone's mother tells them to drink more water. I sadly haven't seen my family in over 2 years because of the pandemic there in England. But I still, when I'm driving to work, my mother asks me whether I'm eating my greens and drinking enough water. So that must be important. And then sleep. I think we are, way more efficient when we're sleeping. And, I know from the studies that have been done on doctors after shift work, if you're not sleeping, the requisite number of hours at the more severe end, it's the same as going into school drunk the next day in terms of how you're able to pay attention. Which I guess, therefore, brings me on to that topic, which is a good one. I mean, self-medication is a huge problem during the pandemic. And I think, both in my experience of friends and colleagues that I know, as well as, younger people I am, proud to work with in clinic, I think lots of people have self-medicated during during COVID to cope with anxiety. I think, we all know someone who's taken up vaping, even though I think it looks frankly ridiculous. We know people who probably maybe drink a bit more than they should, or smoke a bit of weed, or do things that before the pandemic they wouldn't have really considered. And I think it's just important to reflect that, one, and I'll say this probably every podcast it can be brought up, there is currently no evidence base for CBD or THC in the treatment of anxiety, and it's not effective. I will be the first person recommending that to my patients if the evidence gets published to suggest that. So I'm watching Colorado and California and Massachusetts, but at the moment we have no evidence to recommend that. And what we're really talking about is a short-term anxiolytic benefit in the case of central nervous depressants like marijuana and alcohol. But really, when the come down from those substances occurs, mood is going to be worse and anxiety is going to be worse. And that's particularly problematic for any individual with a history of anxiety, a primary mood disorder, or depression.
Abby, what tips would you give or advice for managing? And you kind of talked about a little bit with the checklist, but any other advice that you would give to your fellow peers about how to manage all those tasks that they're juggling?
Yes, I think I like what Dr. Lowley said about taking one thing at a time and also listening to your body, because nobody knows you better than you. So if you need to sleep, those tasks can wait. like your body is more important and your mental health and physical health is more important than the school and the chores. So if you're hungry, then you need to eat, or if you're sleepy or dehydrated, you need to take care of your body first and realize what's important.
What advice would you give to fight boredom? So I know last year a lot of students were doing, and some still are, digital learning. So they're still kind of isolated. Then we have some that are doing hybrid, coming on campus face-to-face, and then some are doing fully in face, but face-to-face. But, you know, what we saw during the pandemic is that lack of socialization, not being able to do as many social events. And as we're opening up, that might change. But how do we fight boredom? Abby, what are ways that, you know, your peers could do that?
I think technology is a lot. FaceTiming and, yes, Snapchatting. But that is a good way. But also, people underestimate what just going outside can do. Because I know during quarantine, that is the most I've been outside in probably a very long time. Just appreciating the nature and everything else. Like, you can find things and realize things that you maybe not have realized before, because we were always looking down at our phone or always, you know, inside, cooped up. And I guess we have a better appreciation for the outside and nature.
I love that. I remember, I think sometimes boredom forces us to be creative. And so I think, you know, even myself, and Dr. Levy, you could probably talk about that, how to get creative and like how to cope and try new things. A lot of people were hiking and just trying new things. So I love that, getting outdoors, going outside, you know, trying new things.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I think Abby gave a, you know, very eloquent description of mindfulness. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, you think about, we go through our day. A guy I love listening to, John Kabat-Zinn, who's the father of the mindfulness movement in the United States, he really says that we're not really human beings anymore. We're human doings. Mm. We never really stop and look around us throughout the day, because we are just moving from one task to the next and not really experiencing life. And I think if you think about the first thing you drink in the morning, your taste buds are going to appreciate that more than anything else throughout the day. And we usually just grab the water or the coffee, or in my case, regrettably, the Diet Coke, and just chug it down. And, you know, you can actually pause and really enjoy the sensory experience of that. Or, I mean, I live pretty close to nature in a forest environment, and I started standing on my doorstep and not taking that second step until I saw something that made me vaguely smile. And there's always just things around you in the world that if you stop and pause for long enough, as Abby said, to give them attention, the world's a lot more wholesome and beautiful and intricate than we really notice in our day-to-day lives. And I think the pandemic really was a lovely opportunity to slow down and become more mindful.
Yeah. So if we know that a child, so say a friend or, you know, someone is experiencing difficulty coping or, you know, having a lot of anxiety or just really struggling with the adjustment, what can parents or guardians do to help? What advice would you give, Dr. Lilly?
This is a question for me. Okay. Parents, I would say, as I reiterated earlier, sort of being adaptable and being emotionally responsive and being available emotionally in the moment for your loved ones, and being attentive and not stuck down in our devices, and actually just creating a currency in home where emotions are something that can be discussed openly. And so it wouldn't be anything out of the ordinary for a member of the family today to say, actually, today I'm really sad, or actually, today I'm really worried and I'm really anxious at going to school because of the plague out there. My 4-year-old calls it the sickness. The sickness, Daddy. It makes me feel like I'm in a Jane Austen novel or something. I like it. But the sickness, Daddy, the sickness. But I think just making those kind of conversations commonplace around the breakfast table, or, you know, the other points in the day where the families get together, I think is a good way to, you know, make sure that preventatively that crisis doesn't develop. And I think also sort of modeling behavior as well. I think, you know, younger people learn from their parents how to manage crises. And if, you know, a large blunt and a bottle of Jack Daniels is what they see from mum and dad, it's probably not healthy. So I think, you know, if mum and dad are going out for walks, doing a bit of yoga, meditation, mindfulness, therapy, seeing friends more and doing everything they can to be more socially connected, We know that, you know, younger people emulate their parents, and I think being good role models is important to create that, you know, currency of help seeking. And then I think, you know, it's knowing what exactly is a crisis. And, you know, unfortunately, you know, school is a place where friend life, home life, and then internal life sort of, you know, all cross over. And I think, you know, if kids are starting not to do well in school and the grades are starting to slide and, you know, a previously outgoing person is keeping more to themselves, or, as Abby told us, a previously energetic person who's had boundless energy and been involved in so many extracurriculars to such a high standard is suddenly out of energy and, you know, not feeling herself, I think these are signs for parents at least to gently, from a respectful distance, start asking some questions. And I think, again, it's about understanding, not explaining, and just, I guess, reiterating that we love the people close to us, and it's always okay not to be okay. Mm. And in my world, not okay has a slightly different definition, and because of what I see in my clinic, and I, to me, that means ultimately, if a young person is having thoughts of not wanting to be alive, not wanting to wake up tomorrow, or on a more extreme end of that, yeah, you know, wanting to do something to harm themselves in any way, then that sort of, for me, is something that necessitates professional input. And we have a wonderful Georgia crisis line, which is on 1-800-715-4225. But not many people know that when this governor took over, he created an app form of this called MyGCAL, and it is all text and conversation based, which at least the early studies seem to show that more young people are, you know, confident using that, and that's something that you can always download onto your phone. I think it's important that people know that emergency rooms do have people who are trained in acute mental health assessment on staff 24 hours a day. And whilst that sounds extreme, it's also comforting just to know that that option is there for anybody. But I think for more subacute problems, like, you know, you may be seeing some personality change in a young person, or if you yourself are at school, that your work is getting more difficult, it's just getting, your body's a little bit heavier and it's getting a little bit harder to go through the day, or you're a little bit worried and suddenly you're a lot worried and you're not sleeping and it's sort of becoming a consuming problem, that it is possible to go and get a, just call an office like mine. My office number within the Tanner system is 770-812-3530. Press option 2 for me. My voice is actually the voicemail for the office, so you will get this dulcet greeting if you were ever to call. But I think the nice thing is that getting help for mental health challenges is really becoming more commonplace. I love it when people come to clinic and say, hey, you look after this friend and that friend and this friend. And I'm like, you know, already part of a group. And it's nice that it gives me huge optimism for the future, that kind of dialogue is happening, that people know who somebody's psychiatrist is and that they are seeking help and getting good results, and on the basis of that want to get help themselves. And I think that, you know, that just fills me with so much hope and optimism at a, you know, an otherwise, you know, troubling time in the history of our world.
Thank you, Abby and Dr. Lilly, for this powerful conversation. I think that a lot of people are going to be touched by this conversation, and, you know, everyone can relate in some way. So thank you so much for all of your feedback and you just being vulnerable with us, Abby. I really appreciate it. So thank you.
Thank you.
Great being here with you, Charisse. Thank you.
If anything that we talked about resonates with you today, or you feel that your anxiety is getting out of the way, where it's impacting your daily life and your activities for several days in a row, do know that Willowbrook Counseling Center in Willowbrook at Tanner does have a free confidential resource for you, where you can get a free screening at 770-812-9551 to schedule that. Also, I do encourage you to schedule or call your healthcare provider if you also are experiencing high level of symptoms of anxiety or any other symptoms that maybe are distressing to you. Again, I want to thank our panel today, and thank you so much for listening.